It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And I'm Joey Loss.
Look at that. A full house today. We've got everybody back in town and working hard. Adam's tanned and rested. Joey's exhausted. You know why? Because he's selling a house. That takes it out of you, I think.
Actually, my daughter just started a stream of night terrors.
So that's, really?
That's the exhausting thing right now. It was like 3 hours last night. Pretty crazy.
I don't miss those days at all.
No. And hopefully, as she grows and you grow, you'll find a way to forgive her. Hopefully. Anyway, let's not dwell on the odd things and bad things when we're just really here to have a bunch of fun anyway. For all of you regulars, welcome back, and thanks for always being there. You're the reason we've been showing up for, 11 years and change?
Ish, yeah.
Yeah. And we'll keep doing it as long as you'll keep listening. It's a fair bargain. I'm almost certain that we're going to have the rest of the shows this year all be brought to you free. How's that?
Okay.
Okay.
It's the deal.
All right. Trickle of electricity. Maybe that's about it. And you know you can always reach us online at WBOB.com. There is an app for your phone or your computer, whatever. You can go direct from anywhere in the country. We've got people listening now. You can't imagine some of the creative places where people tune into the show. And, of course, if you were to miss it, well, we rebroadcast it in a podcast, wherever podcasts are sold. Free or otherwise, and you can always find us. And that's what, Tuesday, Monday?
Mondays. Monday. 90% of the time we get it out on Monday unless there's a holiday or someone's sick something like that.
So there's no real excuse for ever missing the show. So don't ever miss the show. Anyway, we're going to talk about what the three of us want to talk about today. But if you want to change the subject, all you got to do is pick up the phone and dial 904-222-8255. And we will put you to the head of the line and change the subject to what's on your mind. And it could be most anything. It can be, you know, we'd like to have some bearing on financial topics, but practically everything's financial anymore. And nothing applies to more people in the world than their own personal finances. So don't hesitate to bring something up. If you just want to comment, fine. If you want to spend a couple minutes telling us what a wonderful show it is, we'll make room for you. How's that? We get that once in a while. Not often. Anyway, we had another interesting market week. Going into Friday, I thought this is going to be another humdinger. Didn't turn out that way. But take it away and let's. It wasn't bad. Don't get down on it.
It really wasn't that bad. Yeah. There was some bright spots, but there was some headwinds going into this week. The recent run-up had brought the market into overbought territory, and whenever that happens, it can keep going up, but generally you are going to see a pullback at some point. And then President Trump ramped up the rhetoric on tariffs, and that got the market all jittery midweek, and that, I think, is what caused what looked like early gains during the week to be pared back. And the market ended up falling modestly during the week, with the Dow down 1%, the S&P was off 0.3%, and the NASDAQ was off just 0.1%. All three indexes are still positive in the third quarter and up over 4% for the year. So no real damage done by this week. It was just one of those proofs that the market can't just go in one direction all the time. The Dow isn't the only index of the big three. I'm sorry, the Dow is the only index of the big three that hasn't seen a golden cross on its chart yet this year. The NASDAQ saw one on June 30th. The S&P saw one on July 1st. And the Dow is on pace to see one next week. So we'll see if that comes to fruition, but it does look good for that. Golden crosses are when the 50-day moving average crosses the 200-day moving average to the upside. And they are generally considered bullish signals for the market. Sometimes people put too much weight into them. They aren't as bullish as some people assign that quality to them, but they are usually a good sign. And all three indexes don't often see golden crosses within a month of each other. This would be just the sixth time that has happened if this comes to fruition next week. When that has happened in the past, the forward returns have been really strong, especially in the NASDAQ. So if we do see that next week, I would take that as a pretty good sign. For those worrying about inflation, the trueflation number actually came down this week to from over 2% to just 1.7%. This isn't an official measure of inflation, but it's one that uses real-time data to measure aspects of the U.S. economy, and the official data keeps seems to be backing up what it says. I believe the Fed will need to drop rates at their next meeting. Keep an eye on the CPI and PPI reports next week to get an idea of what the Fed might actually do. Those aren't the preferred measure of Fed inflation, but they do put some weight into both of those reports. And they've been pretty low recently. Maybe a little bit of a surprise to the upside last month, but the trend has generally been lower than expectations. On an interesting but otherwise meaningless note, NVIDIA became the first company in the world to reach a valuation of $4 trillion this week, and it did it just 2 years after becoming a $1 trillion company. That's pretty remarkable. For a company that size to quadruple in a two-year period, just absolutely remarkable.
I saw an article talking about how $4 trillion is larger than the GDP of all but five countries.
That's insane. Really? Wow. I did not know that.
It's an incredible, useless measurement.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Having a $4 trillion company really doesn't change anything about the world or the stock. I mean, it's just an interesting fact that they were the first ones to do it. There's actually been quite a few that have reached the $1 trillion mark now, but there aren't that many within spitting distance of reaching the $1 trillion mark. There's probably, I think, what I was reading earlier is that there are more over than there are within a reasonable distance of achieving it. So it is a unique feat to reach that milestone.
For sure.
There wasn't much in the way of economic data this week, but the small business sentiment report was released on Tuesday and showed a 98.6, which was in line with forecasts. There was some weakness on the employment and the CapEx, capital spending parts of the report. The report also indicated that poor sales is one of the bigger problems right now, which is mildly concerning. This is the reading that has typically risen during recessionary periods. That's the poor sales problem. Whenever you start to see that rise really quickly, it's a fairly decent indicator of a recession. However, this time we haven't seen a spike in it. It's been a gradual increase, which is different than the spike you see pre-recession. So that's why I say it's mildly concerning and not very concerning. Inflation was mentioned as a problem by only 11% of respondents, down from 37% a few years ago. Seasonally, this is the worst three-month period of the year for the stock market, so don't be too concerned if you see your holdings drift a little lower during the third quarter. However, quarter four, one of the best times of year for the market, so just hold on and don't despair.
Yeah, if you look at the history of July is a surprisingly strong month very frequently and just precedes the weakness the next couple months. So it's no time to be bailing out of anything. All right, we'll take a quick break, be right back with the trivia question and so on. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
I'm Adam Van Wee.
And I'm Joey Loss.
And we do have, as usual, a trivia question brought to you by Paul Lloyd at First Coast Alarm. You can call Paul at 904-636-7888. And just so you have a reminder, our lines are open, 904-222-8255. You know, we've been talking for a nice length of time now about how much more fun it is to have any cash holdings, because all of a sudden when the rates went up, we started to get a return on our cash, and it allowed us, not just for ourselves, but all of our clients, to be getting some income, passive income, without taking the additional risks that we had to do for a decade or better. And now, unfortunately for a lot of people, not everybody has taken the initiative to do that. What percentage of people who have money saved, cash money, are accepting under 1% annual returns? What percentage of Americans are still taking that terrible rate and they don't have to? And it is simply a round percentage. It's between 1 and 99. There. Now you got your range set. So anybody else who wants to narrow the range, just give us a call. 904-222-8255. All right, anything else you want to wrap up on the market?
Nope, that was it.
Okay, there wasn't a whole bunch to talk about, but you're going to see some volatility this week because some of the economic numbers that are coming out are good ones, things that people pay
important things, yeah.
We like inflation.
That's what we didn't have this week to kind of drive that.
Exactly. There wasn't any news, and therefore there wasn't much action. And let's see. I have a couple of things. 225 million dollars. That's how much crypto the FBI wants to give back to victims of a scam. That's a lot of money, right? $225 million the FBI is giving back. There are over 430 investors who were duped in the crypto market. It's unfortunate that they're not going to get all their money back, though, because the $225 doesn't quite cover the $9.3 billion in losses last year alone.
Dang.
Wow.
Don't be thinking of this crypto thing as safe, people. It's a very important mistake that you shouldn't make. All right. Who wants to start out with a topic? Shall I go through the pile and we'll get comments from you guys and everybody else?
Yeah.
Here's one of my favorites. If you have an active leader, which you could argue at the federal level, Trump, things keep happening with Trump. But if you're in Florida and you pay attention, things keep happening with DeSantis, too. He's a real active manager for our state. Here's one that a lot of people are going to love and a lot of people are not going to like. We've talked before about the various tax holidays that DeSantis is implementing. And this one is going to be permanent. You ever heard of a permanent tax holiday? Hasn't happened until now. But here it comes. All of the hurricane supplies that, you know, there was always a hurricane preparedness holiday for lasted a few days, such as AA batteries, AAA batteries, Cs and Ds, 6-volt, 9-volt, portable generators and portable gas or diesel fuel cans, 5 gallons or less. That was all part of the hurricane holiday. But that isn't going to be the case anymore. It's a permanent back-to-school holiday in the month of August to give some relief to parents who are shopping there. But here's the real good news. From September 8th through December 31st, the camping tax holiday is on. So remember this, it starts September 8th. That means firearms, ammunition, cleaning kits, fishing rods and reels, and other supplies will be sales tax free so Floridians can enjoy the nature outside starting September 8th and all the way to the end of the year. Now, if you've been following, like most of us have, the successive increases in the sales tax itself, you know, I can't remember what it was when we moved here, but it was probably 5% in St. John's County or something like that. And now they're up in the 7s and 7.5s and so on. That means when you save sales tax, it can be a lot of money. When you save it on a big ticket item, like a firearm, a bunch of ammunition and fishing rods and all, now you're talking some real cash in the pocket savings. So thanks to the Gov for our camping tax holiday, September 8th through the end of the year. Thought a lot of people would like that. There's also a lot of people that don't like that. What? Making guns cheaper? What are you thinking?
Too bad. I think that's pretty smart. I mean, it'll increase engagement with a lot of public services that then turn into revenue, too.
So oh, absolutely.
I don't know that it just goes away.
Absolutely.
It could end up being a net benefit.
Yep.
To see.
I would love to see it turn into more in the service area, too, like maybe fishing guides and things like that for a certain time. Speaking of which, one of us at this table caught a nice one yesterday.
Actually, no one at this table caught a nice one yesterday.
somebody that was in your boat.
Yeah, I know.
We did collectively pull up a 200-pound sand shark.
Yeah, that's true.
Both our backs are casualties for that.
Yeah, that's for sure.
But
we caught probably 50-plus fish and only two of the targeted species.
Yeah, and we threw one back because we got the first red snapper so early. It was a big, healthy one.
Oh.
We thought, oh, man, this pace for the day is great.
We don't need this little guy.
Yeah, we got a smaller one, threw him back, and totally regretted it because we didn't see another one for 7 hours.
Too bad. That whole snapper relief program apparently hasn't hit yet, right? the doubling up or tripling up or whatever he's going to do. They're expanding the snapper season.
Well, that is not a certainty. I know DeSantis does want to open it up more, and it needs to be opened up more in some way or another, but it hasn't. Nothing official has come down yet.
Okay.
It is on the Gulf Coast. Definitely much bigger season on the Gulf Coast.
Okay.
Well, the reality is, if it's not snapper season, it's the only thing I can catch.
Yeah, that's right.
No, and then when it's red snapper day, you can't
that's right.
You see everybody else pulling them up.
There was a million boats out yesterday, too.
There were a lot of boats.
They get a lot of warning. There's some kind of a radar system sends it out. Says, don't bite today. They won't throw you back.
Exactly.
All right. Let's see. Labor Department. Do you remember that when the final reckoning was done and all of the jobs that they were lying about in the Biden administration were removed, and then they looked at what was left, and all of the jobs that were created under the Biden administration were to non-native-born Americans? And that, of course, is an egregious problem. Well, a lot of things changed starting in January. Now we find out 100% of the nation's job gains since January were taken by native-born Americans. Good for you, people. I am glad that you're actually willing to take them. We've been listening to this propaganda for so long about jobs that Americans won't do. Do you guys hear about the one in the meatpacking plant? But the feds came in and raided a meatpacking plant and hauled out a great percentage of their workforce, which was comprised largely of illegals. And much to their surprise, the next day, there were lines out the door. Every table was taken. There were cars waiting with people applying for jobs at the meatpacking plant. How about that? From Americans.
Wow.
If you pay them reasonably, they will come, they will take the jobs, most of them. And we have this other 6 million. And I read something this morning I just don't understand, and I'm perfectly happy asking if you guys can figure it out. There are about 7 million Americans unemployed, another 1.6 million who are considered long-term unemployed, 4.5 million Americans who are working part-time but would rather be full-time, and here's what confuses me, 6 million Americans who are not in the labor market but who want a job. What are we supposed to do? Come to you and knock on your door and say, here's your job? How can you want a job and not be in the labor market? Does anybody understand that?
I can't listen to a podcast without hearing Indeed advertised, so I'm not sure. What else can be, you know?
They are everywhere.
Or ZipRecruiter or something.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. You know, I've been around quite some time now. Studied economics for quite some time now. And I cannot wrap my brain around 6 million Americans not in the labor force but who want a job. You know, as long as I've been alive, the way you got a job is you went out and looked for one. Or even if you stayed home and search online, at least then you're counted as in the labor force because you're actually actively seeking one. But if you're part of 6 million who are just sitting around, how do you count yourself in the workforce? I'm just, yeah, maybe it's me. Maybe it's not. Who knows? All right, let's see. Tax relief for seniors. We're going to try to intersperse provisions of the OBBB, as it used to be called. In fact, I got to do a mea culpa a little bit on that one. I have 86th the term OBBB because it is no longer a bill. So last week I put it out there, no more OBBB around here, unless you're talking about history and how this thing came about. Of course, you can use it then. But I said from here on in it's going to be called the OBBL, the One Big Beautiful Law, because that's what it is. Well, I find now that other people have adopted something, and I think it's worthy. A lot of people now are calling it the OBBA, the One Big Beautiful Act. So, my bad. You can call it whatever you want now, OBBA or OBBL, perfectly interchangeable in my book. There, I'm done with the mea culpa thing. The we only got 30 seconds to break, so I want to throw this out, and then we'll go back into the details. But to me, the most important provision of that act was the simple thing that it froze the tax rates forever. So now we can dispense with all of the whining and crying and say, look, these are not cuts anymore. These are the tax rates, and they're going to be there until they're changed. All right, much more when we come back. Don't go anywhere. We'll pay a few bills and be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And I'm Joey Loss.
And we have the trivia question open. You can call in at 904-222-8255. How many Americans, what percentage of Americans, are still settling for less than 1% on their cash savings when they should be doing so much better? All right, the OBBA, I'm not gonna go there. OBBA is the one big, beautiful act. You all probably know that Trump had been, I don't know if you call them promises, but he had been campaigning on the concept of no tax on Social Security. And for those of you who know the history of Social Security and taxation, you know that the original design said that there would never be any taxes on it. But it was only meant to help a certain small segment of the population. And as, you know, it's the government, so of course it grows and grows and grows. And then they need more and more money, so along the way, they justified 50% of it being taxable if you made more than X amount of money. And the argument on that was, well, your employer got to deduct his half of your Social Security, so it's only fair that you get taxed on it. I don't understand that logic necessarily, but that's what they did.
Yep.
And then Bill Clinton came along, and having promised probably the thing that got him elected, promised a big old middle-class tax cut. Well, didn't quite work out that way. And when push came to shove, instead of cutting taxes, he raised them on older people, taking those same people who were paying 50%, at least the upper part of those, and bumped it up to 85%. So I figured the least that they could do if there's not going to be elimination of taxation is take back the extra 35. And, of course, that's been egregious because the limits, the income limits that subjected to that have not been changed. They're statutory, and they have not been changed in forever. So it is a complete and utter ripoff. But mechanically, here's what happens. When you pay taxes on any of your Social Security income, that money is segregated immediately and turned back over to the, quote, trust fund, the pool of money that's shrinking. Any reduction in taxes on benefits is going to cause that pool to shrink faster. You do not save a failing system by draining it more or funding it less. That is a complete and opposite reaction to what it's going to take to save it. For that, I remain a bit conflicted. But I had reported for a few weeks that it can't happen. What Trump is saying cannot happen because nobody's going to allow the system to go broke that much quicker because of that. But what did happen, for those of you who like to follow these things, every senior now, 65 and up, is getting an additional $6,000 addition to the standard deduction. Now, most people are doing standard deductions these days. So what that is a very direct tax savings for all of you who are 65 and over, whether or not you're collecting, by the way. Good morning, Marshall.
Gentlemen.
How are you?
Great.
Good.
I've been waiting to ask you your opinion on this item.
I've been waiting to deliver it.
Maria. I'm listening to Maria in the morning this week, and Kevin Hastert was on, and she had him go back to a conversation one of the Sunday shows had had. Mm-hmm. And they were trying to accuse him of a lot of different things. This lady was bringing up every odd-named statistical analyst known to man. Mm-hmm. And Kevin just put it in proper perspective by explaining how far off the CBO has been in their projection, but nobody seems to hold them to those errors, nor has he seen any of the rest of these folks' record as to what their errors have been.
Well, somebody's been holding the CBO to the fire, and that would be the Van Wee Financial Hour.
I think.
Well, have you seen where people have actually looked at these different analysts and said, "Oh, your projections were way off."
Mm-hmm. And there's no accountability.
I mean, the news will do it occasionally, Fox News and some other talking heads, but no, not at a federal level. But the problem. The thing that makes this tricky is that the CBO has a set of rules that they have to follow. And so they might be doing their calculations 100% correctly,
yep.
But they're the wrong calculations.
Yep. They're guaranteed to fail by the design of the system. And some...
well, that probably deserves the most attention.
All right,
my other question
just
for y'all
second,
is...
Let me insert one question for you, Marshall.
Okay, sure.
The CBO was an act of Congress. It is not in the Constitution, right? Why don't they change it?
Exactly, because they don't want to. But that's
the answer.
Yeah.
You know what we need? We need the CBO to start doing Monte Carlos instead of straight line.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
it would be an improvement.
Which is a form of the type of analysis that is not static. It's dynamic, and it throws human behavior into it, that kind of
thing.
And
other variables.
Yeah. I mean, one of the simplest but most impactful figures they have to use is what is the 10-year treasury rate, right? It's massively impactful on what happens to the deficit over a 10-year period. And they just pick one number.
And they're required to use that in all scenarios.
Exactly. And that's a ridiculous process for that particular.
Okay, Marshall, sorry for the interruption, but I thought it was important.
Oh, no, I appreciate that. My other question for you, one, I sincerely appreciate Adam bringing up True Nation in the past.
Mm-hmm.
I tried to follow it as well. Do you think there's actually anybody in the current BLS that takes a look at it just to see where the differences are?
None, obviously.
I would suspect there's many analysts that work there that are aware of the site.
Right.
And
they probably don't talk about it.
I would think maybe over cocktails they would talk to each other about it, but they may not be allowed to use something or bring up something like that at work. It's a big bureaucracy. Innovation and new ideas are not allowed.
Correct.
I grew up in the Northern Virginia area where a lot of friends' dads and moms worked for the government. And, you know, there was a huge percentage of them that were frustrated by the types of tools and policies they had to follow. Mm-hmm. But their personal opinions were much different. So I would bet there's a lot of people who feel like they're not using the best data, but they're forced to.
Yeah, I agree.
Marshall, do you?
Well, hopefully they're given time enough to think through that and off their suggestions up to the powers that be.
Well, hopefully. So. True, but they seem to be falling on deaf ears. Marshall, you're of a certain age, like me. You remember when Greenspan was at the head of the Fed, I assume.
Yeah.
And do you remember when it was disclosed, people were getting angry with him because his interest rates were not coming down as kind of like the scenario today, you know. And they went back and they found his financial disclosure sheet. And this was back in the 80s. So this was a lot of money. But he had listed as his assets no stocks, and between $4 and $6 million in U.S. Treasuries. Wonder why he wanted interest rates higher. Any idea?
There's a lot of conflicts. A lot of conflict.
It certainly is.
Well, thank you, sirs. I appreciate the information.
Always fun to hear from you.
See ya.
Another beautiful sunny day. You go have some fun.
Thanks for the call, Marshall.
I did forget to ask him about the trivia question, but Marshall, if you want to call back for a trivia question, we'll take it immediately. And my apologies. You get into some of this stuff like the CBO, and it can escalate because it's just so egregious. And the problem is it doesn't just affect the three of us in this room and the one next door. This really impacts everybody.
Yeah. It actually makes spending bills worse in a lot of cases because they have to follow these ridiculous rules, and the CBO is going to score it. It's going to look bad. Yeah. But they're scoring it based on these antiquated systems and rules that don't make any sense. It's just – it is counterproductive to our government process.
Mm-hmm. When you have to follow the Byrd rule and have it scored by the CBO – you have no chance of getting anything right.
No,
and that is the very nature of the problem that we faced with the OBBA, because the Byrd rule had caused those tax rates to be temporary for 8 years, and they were going to expire at the end of this year. Well, the idea was very simple. They do what they always do. They pass it into law, and then the next year or the year after that or whatever, or the next term of the president, whatever, then they just make it permanent because they don't have to show that anymore. So the idea was Trump's going to get reelected, and the first thing he'll do is make it permanent. But then some other stuff happened at the ballot box and some other places, but that's another story. Anyway, it wound up that the Democrats, of course, wouldn't change that. So it was set to expire when Trump got back in. So the first thing that they had to do from a tax standpoint was very simple. They had to get those put into some kind of permanent status in the tax code. But the problem with that is the people who hated Trump and all things conservative, they called that another tax cut. Bosco, we've only got 1 minute before the break. Hopefully you can hold on, and we'll grab you the second we get done with the break, because this is just not enough time. But I see you there, and we appreciate the call. Anyway, the concept of keeping your taxes the way they are, we were supposed to believe that that was a tax cut. And it's just not a tax cut because it never went back up. It's just the existing tax rates. But the number one good thing that happened in the OBBA is that got frozen. Now you want to change it? You got to have an act of Congress. That's the way it ought to be. All right, one last quick break, and then we'll get Bosco on the other side. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
I'm Adam Van Wee.
And I'm Joey Loss.
And as promised, good morning, Bosco.
Morning, y'all. The Three Musketeers. How goes it? Another great program.
Oh, thanks so much. What's on your mind today?
I thought I'd try a number 8 bird shot and throw you something at your at your trivia, and I was going to go with 10%.
All right. Would it shock you if I said that you're so far low that you will probably have to sit down before I tell you the real number at the end of the show? So far low.
Well, it's a good thing I'm setting.
Well, it's a bad thing that more than 10% of the people in this country are accepting 1%. And it's lots more than 10%.
Do you think it's lack of education? Because money is in our system is where it's at, you know. And,
yeah, I don't think
it's all these variables, but you know, education.
I don't think it's education. I'll tell you, Bosco, it's crazy how many incredibly smart and educated people I have told about high yield savings account who didn't have one. They just. Well, A, it's not on the forefront of their everyday life. They don't think about it that much. B, they may or may not know that these things exist. They've just always been taught that your bank is where you save money. And why wouldn't the bank give you the current rate on a savings account? I think it's just not something that's on the forefront of everybody's mind. But so many smart people I've told about this, and they to a T, have been their eyes wide open the first time they get a monthly interest payment into their account, and it's more than they made all last year at their bank.
It is unbelievable.
No, exactly. I mean, but you know, bottom line is that you know, there's more people I need to listen to y'all.
That,
you know,
we're not going to disagree with you there.
No, in fact, that was probably the most astute comment of the day.
I'm going to let you go. I'm listening to all of y'all at one time. I don't know what's going on here. And but again, another great program, and I'll try a different shot since the cost for ammo is going down. But it's great. I like that.
This one's going to take a slug.
Yeah. Y'all take care.
Thanks, Bosco.
Thanks, Bosco.
I think there's also a convenience factor on that. Like, the big banks just know they can get away with it.
Yeah.
Because people don't want
to. They have no incentive to move you to a higher yielding product.
Did you see what Capital One was just convicted of? And they got fined big time for this.
Did not.
They had a savings account, and they had two of them. One was high yield and one wasn't. And the names were almost identical. They had something like 360 embedded in the name, but there was one word that made it a high yield. And they did not tell their customers about it, and they did not suggest that they move their cash in there. They just paid out a gazillion-dollar fine. Now, wouldn't we have liked that better, that money, to have gone to their customers instead of to the government?
Of course, but that's never how it works.
Yeah, and you know, if you do business with a big bank, especially, and, you know, you can argue Capital One status that way. Start looking at things like that. It, just do some searching on the internet. Fines paid by Wells Fargo, fines paid by Capital One. Make sure you're dealing with somebody that you want to deal with.
Yeah, you won't find a single bank that doesn't have huge fines paid to the government, though.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And I have no problem with, they're always going to do some things that are not good. But when you look at the rap sheet, I would say, on some of the banks, it then I know what I'd do. I'd be walking next door saying, hello, credit union, how are you today?
Yeah, I mean, but we use the local credit union, and their savings account is garbage, terrible. Too. So, I mean,
no, you really have to have an independent high-yield savings account if you're being a reasonable money manager with your own money. And as Adam said, they make more in a month than they made in a year, and that can be by several times. Mm-hmm. It is truly astounding. Capital One has one, obviously. American Express has one. There's some others.
There are lots of others.
Yeah, and you know, good, reputable people that you know. The one thing I wouldn't do is get an online-only bank unless you're very familiar with it. There are a couple of them that are actually reputable, but when you read some of these things, when it's called fly-by-night financial services or something, I'd avoid that one. Take a 0.25% less and go with a good one. Just, you know, something to think about. When you hear the answer to this trivia question, you're going to realize why I brought it up. I promise you that.
And what's amazing is, you know, even these banks that are paying 4% in the current environment, they're still profitable.
Oh, yeah.
Isn't that, you know, it's still truth? A dang good business to be in.
But imagine if you were taking in deposits and paying 0.2% on it and then loaning that money out in mortgages at 7%,
yep,
you're going to be killing it.
And I think your point two is 10 times too generous, because I think most of the big banks are paying like 0.01 on checking or 0.02%.
Yeah, right. You got to have quite a bit of money to get a penny.
Yeah.
And if you look at proportional banking, you can figure out very easily how they can give you 4% and make money. Because what is the reserve requirement today? 20%, 22%, something like that. Which means they can lend out your money four times without batting an eye.
Right.
Each time at a higher rate than they're paying you. And they get to keep the other ones.
So in other words, they could pay you 7%.
Yeah.
What mortgages are paying and still make times
7%.
Yep. Yeah. Exactly.
4 times 7%.
Yep. It's a racket.
Yep.
But it's a bracket that can serve you well, and it needs to be there. Just don't let it turn into a racket from an actual, you know, good deals where everybody should be smiling. One of my 8,700,000 oldest sayings in the world is, can always tell a good business deal because everybody walks out smiling, and you can always tell a good political deal because nobody walks out smiling. That's how you judge these things. Anyway, back to the way they're handling the Social Security taxation thing. I said everybody gets that $6,000 extra, a couple get $12,000. I've tried very hard to be sure that that's true because I read one source that said it's $6,000 per taxpayer. And if you've been listening to this show long enough, you know the definition of a taxpayer is that entity, be it a person or two persons, who file a tax return. So that would have limited it to six. But all my other sources say that it's per person who is 65. And I'm going with that until I find out.
I think it's otherwise. Per person.
I'm pretty certain. So if you get that times your marginal tax rate, it does not take everybody off of paying tax on Social Security, but it bumps it up to about 88% of people will not pay tax on Social Security. I think given the restorative powers, so to speak, of not having the fund be drawn down so fast, I think it was a very, very significant and intelligent compromise.
Are you saying that if you combine that with the standard deduction, then you're not – well, that's only if you assume that Social Security is the first money that you're taxing. So what if they have other sources of income? I mean, it's a very subjective measure of it. But if you do that, then yes, you're probably getting most people in that bucket.
Yeah. And some things – turned out okay. You know, the old expression says Americans will always do the right thing after they've exhausted all the other possibilities. It is never so true as it is in Washington. Let's see. Don't cry for me, Argentina. Have you been following this guy?
Yeah, he's done incredible things. And every economist predicted that it would be financial ruin for their country.
Yep.
It's been the opposite. Their stock market is up 105% since he was elected, I think. Don't quote me on that, but it's somewhere in that neighborhood.
Argentina's economy is growing at 7.7%. It grew 1.9% in April.
Jeez.
Yeah. That's the most recent month for which numbers are available. That compares to the Chinese growth rate of a very suspect 5%.
Does anyone buy that number? Does it have a negative sign in front of it?
It doesn't, but it would if it weren't China. That's the truth. So how did he do it? Well, he cut the government budget, took agency after agency of the government, just closed them.
Yep.
Just put a lock on the door. Go away. That's it. Controlled the money supply. Now, here's the one that kills me. And he removed price controls. Well, if you don't have price controls, how do you keep prices from going up?
Wait a second. This sounds a whole lot like capitalism. You're telling me that worked?
Yes, I am. Huh. As a matter of fact, he took office in December of 23, and inflation was 25%. Per month.
Yeah, it was. And right now, according to Trueflation, it's at 33% per year. Mm-hmm. So they're seeing about the same inflation in a year that they used to see in a month.
In May, it was 1.5%. Not bad. And it'll get better. Over 100 economists signed a letter in 2023 saying that his proposals were, quote, fraught with risks that make them potentially very harmful for the Argentine economy and the Argentine people.
Mm-hmm.
100 economists. Sounds like there's 50 ex-spies and stuff, isn't it?
Yeah.
But, you know, economists are called, or how about economics, it's called the dismal science. And how many times do we have to prove that? Because it's never any better.
It's
absolutely never better.
But it's also like they just don't want to try anything new. Let's keep doing the same horrible policies that ran us into 250% inflation.
Yeah, and they don't apologize?
Nope. That's no accountability whatsoever.
All right. According to Raisin.com, you can check it out just like it sounds, Raisin.com, 82% of Americans are earning less than 1% on their savings. 82%. That is millions and millions and millions of spendable dollars, billions of spendable dollars that should be going back into the economy just by doing something so simple as opening up a high-yield savings account. It's inexplicable, except for the part, like Adam explained, if you don't know about it, you don't do it. So, like that. All right, well, this has been fun and fast. I always like having the young guys here with me. See you again next.